Hello, I'm Tay, and welcome to Mental Health Matters, a new show at LSR which aims to bring awareness and understanding to those suffering from mental health and their supporters. Sorry if I sound a bit breathless, I have just been running. So, yeah, that's the reason. So today's show is going to focus on spoken word and mental health. But before we get on to that part of the show, it's time for some mental health in the media, which is very, very exciting. So today we're going to be focusing on Ken Livingstone's comments towards Kevin Jones. And basically, in case you haven't been kind of caught up with all of this, Kevin Jones was going to be appointed to Jeremy Corbyn's defence group. And I'm not going to get into kind of whether that was a right or wrong decision. That's all about politics, and quite frankly, I don't understand it. But Kevin Jones then kind of retaliated, I guess, and said that Livingstone should not be appointed to that group. And Ken Livingstone then said that, you should seek psychiatric help, which, yeah, probably isn't the best thing to say. And so I have a few problems with that statement. You know, not only does a recommendation to seek psychiatric help trivialize those actually going through the incredibly painful process of admitting they have a problem and beginning to address it through professional help, it also shows how absolutely uneducated the politicians are who are making decisions about our country. And really, that's just quite scary. You know, it's not something to be laughed at or to it's just things like this and comments like this. You know, I think that we're making progress, and we are, and you know, it's great, but at the same time, you know, I just, a lot of the things make me doubt how much progress is actually being made. I feel like those comments are kind of like really, they really show how, for a politician, they don't take, those in power don't take mental health seriously, but regard it as an afterthought, you know, something to address in a political speech to gain support, but they never actually transform those words into action. And that's what's so disgusting about Livingstone's comments. You know, they're just so indicative about how people actually view mental health, and that's absolutely disgusting. Livingstone then went on to defend his comments by stating, "If he, Kevin Jones, is upset, I'm sorry. But he can't blame me. He was the one who came out and attacked me and questioned my competence to do this job. I grew up in South London. If someone was rude to you, you were rude back to them. I didn't go to Eton and I didn't get that smarmy, charming education." Strangely enough, Ken, you just made things worse. You turned this into a class battle by mentioning Jones's private school education, which is absolutely irrelevant. You're still wildly inappropriate. Instead of offering a grovelling and sincere-sounding apology to Jones, you attempt to turn this into a class war by mentioning Jones's private school education. As a 70-year-old man, an active member of Parliament, you should be mature enough to admit that you were wrong and apologise to the 1 in 4 citizens of the British public who suffer from mental health conditions. It's really not that complicated. You know, I'm a 19-year-old girl and I can see that, and I know that a lot of people would agree with me. But now that's over. Deep breaths. It's time to get on to the spoken word segment of the show. In case you didn't know, spoken word involves performance-based poetry that focuses on the aesthetics of wordplay and storytelling. It often includes collaboration and experimentation with other art forms such as music, theatre and dance. To open up the topic, I thought I'd show you my favourite spoken word piece by Mary Lambert called Body Love, and this is parts 1 and 2. Just to give you a bit of background, Mary Lambert is a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and trauma, bipolar disorder, and eating and body image difficulties. This poem addresses these struggles and has received more than 800,000 views on YouTube, although I think it should be one of the most viewed videos on YouTube. It is worth noting at this point that although these poems are not explicitly triggering, they might express some content which listeners might find upsetting and or triggering.
We're trying to fit into the social norm like squeezing in last year's prom dress. I know girls who are low-rise, MAC eyeshadow, and binge drinking. I know girls that wonder if they're disaster and sexy enough to fit in. I know girls who are fleeing bombs from the mosques of their skin. Playing Russian roulette with death, it's never easy to accept that our bodies are fallible and flawed. But when do we draw the line? When the knife hits the skin, isn't it the same thing as purging? Because we're so obsessed with death. Some women just have more guts than others. The funny thing is women like us don't shoot. We swallow pills, still wanting to be beautiful at the morgue, still proceeding to put on makeup, still hoping that the mortician finds us fuckable and attractive. We might as well be buried with our shoes and handbags and scars. Girls, we flirt with death every time we etch a new tally mark into our skin. I know how to split my wrist to reveal a battlefield too, but the time has come for us to reclaim our bodies. Our bodies deserve more than to be war-torn and collateral, offering this fuckdom as a pathetic means to say, I only know how to exist when I am wanted. Girls like us are hardly ever wanted, you know? We're used up, and we're sad, and drunk, and perpetually waiting by the phone for someone to pick up and tell us that we did good. We did good. I know I am because I said I am. I know I am because I said I am. I know I am because I said I am. My body is whole. My body is whole. I know I am because I said I am. I know I am because I said I am. I know I am because I said. Bumpy love body naked, and remember the first time you touched someone with the sole purpose of learning all of them. Touch them because the light was pretty on them, and the dust and the sunlight danced the way your heart did. Touch yourself with a purpose. Your body is the most beautiful royal. Fathers and uncles are not claiming your knife anymore, are not your razor. Now put the sharpness back. Lay your hands flat and feel the surface of scarred skin. I once touched a tree with charred limbs. The stump was still breathing, but the tops were just ashy remains. I wonder what it's like to come back from that, because sometimes I feel forest fires erupting from my wrists, and the smoke signals sent out the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Love your body the way your mother loved your baby feet, and brother arm wrapping shoulders, and remember this is important. You are worth more than who you fuck. You are worth more than a waistline. You are worth more than beer bottles displayed like drunken artifacts. You are worth more than any naked body could proclaim in the shadows. More than a man's whim or your father's mistake. You are no less valuable as a size 16 than a size 4. You are no less valuable as a 32A than a 36C. Your sexiness is defined by concentric circles within your wood. It is wisdom. You are a goddamn tree stump with leaves sprouting out. Reborn.
Now, I absolutely love that poem, and I love the lines, still proceeding to put on makeup, still wanting to be beautiful at the morgue, still hoping that the mortician finds this desirable, because it really emphasises how ridiculous the body standards we hold ourselves to, not only the body standards that society holds us to, and I think that's something that, you know, is quite useful to think about. Now, very excitingly, we have our very own Melissa Cohen on the show with her poem Anxiety. She's part of the spoken word community at the LSR, and she has decided to write this amazing poem for us.
It is believed that monsters get you in the night, but I am here to disagree. From a common experience with a monster called Anxiety, you may have seen flashes of him in your mind, the end of his tail loitering in your back sight. Heard him sniggering when you were walking alone, and suddenly he was ready for a fight. Grabs you when you're least expecting it, a shadow smothers you, covers you, suffocates you in yourself. Running so far away you look behind, and the shadow is following you, but it's you. You're in the battle with yourself. Who will advance, running out of fuel? Game, battle begins. Game over, nobody won. I didn't know it was coming. Never was warned about classified anxiety monsters. Thought bipolar and crazy was... would never catch me, but that was part of its charm, luring me in, sitting, resting, breathing on my skin, when I didn't know it was there. This time the battle was ours, last week it was 2 days. You never know when a monster's anxiety crazed. It takes you over, whispers in your ear, flaps its tentacles against your mind so that you will hear. It will do what it likes, give up, the monster's in control, stuttering and stumbling, mind trapped. Freeze, muttering and humming, monster arrives when it please. It's the random hit, you don't know when it comes. The fuel of addiction, you want it back, now it's gone. Got so used to mundane pain, got so used to the recycled thoughts in my brain. Think they look at you like you're insane. Paranoia, thought I saw ya, it'll floor ya. Monster squeezes its liquid into your brain, filling every area so you're trapped by your own chain. Chained to your head, chained to your mind, get me out of this body. Tentacles suck me closer, I can't escape. Heart starts racing, oh fuck, it's too late. Addicted to the tentacles, battle begins again, sucking me in to the full-on war this time. The battle was just the anxiety, but it escalated to the final blow, to the panic attack, to the pain-stifling, heart-racing, mind-blowing end. You think it's the end, when the mind and the body disengage from each other, deteriorate together, lash out. Each other. Is it caffeine? Is it drinking? Is it those few times I substance abuse? Is it smoking? I heard it increases your heart rate and your disorders. Your breathing? The more you engage in the monster, the more it has, the more ammo to blow you back again. Don't engage in the monster. Don't talk to it. Don't feed its tentacles. Put your mind into something else, someone else. Just do not befriend an anxiety monster. If you can ever help it, ever, it will only lead to madness.
Okay, thank you so much. Once again, that was Melissa Cohen, and yeah, just absolutely incredible poem. Yeah, absolutely love it. Can't really say enough good things about it. Okay, right now we're going to take a short break, just with a song to kind of like, because you know, slam poetry can be quite heavy, and a lot of the time you kind of just like want to refresh your ears. Sorry.
You gotta go and get angry at all of my honesty. You know I try, but I don't do too well with apologies. I hope I don't run out of time, cause someone call a referee. I just need one more shot, have forgiveness. I know you know that I made those mistakes maybe once or twice. By once or twice, I mean maybe a couple of hundred times. So let me redeem or redeem on myself tonight. Cause I just need one more shot, second chance. Yeah. Is it too late now to say sorry? Cause I'm missing more than just your body. Oh, is it too late now to say sorry? Yeah, I know that I let you down. Is it too late to say sorry now? Ooh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
take every single piece of the blame if you want me to. But you know that there is no innocent one in this game for two. I go, and then you go out and spill the truth.
Can we both say the words and forget this?
Yeah. Is it too late now to say sorry? 'Cause I'm missing more than just your body. Oh, is it too late now to say sorry? Yeah, I know that I let you down. Is it too late to say I'm sorry now? I'm not just trying to get you back on me.
Loves a bit of Justin Bieber, no matter if you're my parents listening or the people in the office listening. Next up, we have Neil Hilborn's The Future. He suffers from bipolar disorder and uses the comedy that he finds in this to create really funny, really honest and moving poetry.
The worst thing about being naked and then being hit by a car is that road rash is a problem for skin. Why was I naked in the middle of the road at noon? I'm glad you asked, imaginary other half of this conversation. I have no idea. Some characteristics of bipolar disorder include dissociation, hallucinations, and fugue states, so sometimes I wake up in places I didn't go to sleep. So, there I am, nude, splayed out on a car like a slutty chicken, screaming about the government conspiracy to take away my feet. Not my real feet, just my brain feet. I'm about 6 inches away from the concrete when I realize, in slow motion, like the exact opposite of a rhinoceros attack, this was not how I imagined my life would turn out. When I was little, I broke both my ankles jumping off a roof because I was sure a cape would enable me to fly. My parents attributed this to my strong imagination. Last year, my therapist called it a delusion. I failed to see the difference. Also, I really can fly and see the future and make stupid people leave coffee shops with my mind. 43% of the time. Sometimes I see people as colors. This guy right here is purple, which means he just got a promotion. Or a blowjob. A blowmotion, if you will. The point is, here's a list of things that my brain has told me to do. Join a cult, start a cult, become a cabinet maker, kill myself, so in essence, become a cabinet maker, break into and then paint other people's houses, have sex with literally everyone who reminds me of my mother, fight people who are much fightier than me, like the cops, so in essence, kill myself. I think a lot about killing myself. Not like a point on a map, but rather like a glowing exit sign to show that's never been quite bad enough to make me want to leave. See, when I'm up, I don't kill myself because holy shit, there is so much left to do. And when I'm down, I don't kill myself because then the sadness would be over. And the sadness is my old paint under the new. The sadness is the house fire or the broken shoulder. I'd still be me without it, but I'd be so boring. They keep telling me that seeing things that aren't technically there is called disturbed cognitive functioning. I call it having a superpower. Once, I pulled over on the 110 freeway and jumped out of my old Jeep because I saw it burst into flames 20 seconds before it actually burst into flames. I knew my girlfriend and I would be together because she turned bright pink the first time she saw me. I know tomorrow is going to come because I've seen it. Sunrise is going to come. All you have to do is wake up. The future has been at war, but it's coming home so soon. The future looks like a child in a cape. The future is the map and the treasure. The future looks just like gravity. Everyone is slowly drifting toward everyone else. We are all going to be part of each other one day. The future is a blue sky and a full tank of gas. I saw the future. I did. And in it, I was alive.
How absolutely incredible and moving. And now to break it up even more, don't worry, there is not more Justin Bieber. I would not do that to you, even though his album is incredible. So now we have Patrick Roach, who is going to talk about the effects of living with someone with mental illness. And I heard a quote recently that I thought was really, really appropriate for this poem. It's, "I'm sorry to all of those who I hurt while I was hurting." And I think that a lot of the time when you suffer from a mental illness, it's very easy to become like wrapped up in your own little world, and you don't kind of pay attention or think about those around you and how they might be suffering because of your mental illness.
21. My father is run over by a car. He's passed out in the road with a blood alcohol content 4 times the legal limit. I do not cry. 4 months later, the nurses lose his pulse, and I wonder whose life flashed before his eyes. Rewinding VHS tapes, old home videos. 20. 19. I haven't brought a friend home in 4 years. 18. My mother sips the word divorce. Her mouth curls at the taste like it burns going down. 17. I start doing homework at Starbucks. I have more meaningful conversations with the barista than with my family. 16. I wait for Christmas Eve. My brother and I usually exchange gifts to one another early. This year, he and my father exchange blows. My mother doesn't go to Mass. 15, I come up with the theory that my father started drinking again because maybe he found out I'm gay. Like, if he could make everything else blurry, maybe somehow I'd look straight. 15. My mother cleans up his vomit in the middle of the night and cooks breakfast in the morning like she hasn't lost her appetite. 15. I blame myself. 15. My brother blames everyone else. 15. My mother blames the dog. 15. Super Bowl Sunday, my father bursts through the door like an avalanche, picking up speed and debris as he falls. Banisters, coffee tables, picture frames, tumbling, stumbling. I find his AA chip on the kitchen counter. 14. My father's been sober for 10, maybe 11 years. I just know we don't even think about it anymore. 13. 12. 11, Mom tells me Daddy's meetings are for AA. She asks if I know what that means. I don't. I nod anyway. 10. My parents never drink wine at family gatherings. All my other aunts and uncles do. I get distracted by the TV and forget to ask why. 9. 8. 7. 6. I want to be Spider-Man. Or my dad. They're kind of the same. 5. 4. 3. I have a nightmare. The recurring one about Ursula from The Little Mermaid. So I get up. I waddle toward Mommy and Daddy's room, blankie in hand. I pause. Daddy's standing in his underwear, silhouetted by refrigerator light. He raises a bottle to his lips. 2. 1. 0. When my mother was pregnant with me, I wonder if she hoped, as so many mothers do, that her baby boy would grow up to be just like his father.
Okay, again, really, really moving and really, really amazing. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time here for Mental Health Matters. But just for one last little poem, I thought I'd play you the amazing The Madness Farce by Andrea Gibson. And this poem, it basically talks about what it's like to have a mental illness and how kind of wrapped up you can be in your mental illness and how painful that state is. So once again, Andrea Gibson, The Madness Glass.
For a few years now, I've been wanting to write a poem on this subject, and I've struggled with depression and anxiety throughout my life, and had a lot of times in my life where it's been hard for me to stay alive, and I realize it's interesting how much shame that brings up in me, even to just say that, not within the context of a poem, but it's true. And when the It Gets Better campaign started, and I was so pumped about the message on some days, and some days not so much, because for me personally, somebody telling me it's going to get better is so comforting in some moments, and in some moments I need to hear, like, it sucks right now, so what are we going to do? And so this is sort of something on that subject, and And thank you all for being rad. And, you know, I'd throw some big words at you if I had them, but rad is what I got, and that fits you. All of this stuff in the beginning, you know, actually happened. I left like 20 of them off the list, and maybe I'll write a longer version someday. Okay. The nutritionist said I should eat root vegetables. Said if I could get down 13 turnips a day, I would be grounded, rooted. Said my head would not keep flying away to where the darkness lives. The psychic told me my heart carries too much weight. Said for $20, she'd tell me what to do. I handed the 20. She said, stop worrying, darling. You will find a good man soon. The first psychotherapist said I should spend 3 hours a day sitting in a dark closet with my eyes closed and my ears plugged. I tried it once but couldn't stop thinking about how gay it was to be sitting in the closet. The yogi told me to stretch everything but the truth, said to focus on the out-breath, said everyone finds happiness if they can care more about what they give than what they get. The pharmacist said Klonopin, Lamictal, Lithium, Xanax. The doctor said an antipsychotic might help me forget what the trauma said. The trauma said, don't write this poem. Nobody wants to hear you cry about the grief inside your bones. But my bones said, Tyler Clemente dove into the Hudson River convinced he was entirely alone. My bones said, write the poem to the lamplight, considering the riverbed, to the chandelier of your faith hanging by a thread, to every day you could not get out of bed, to the bullseye of your wrist, to anyone who has ever wanted to die. I have been told sometimes the most healing thing we can do is remind ourselves over and over and over, other people feel this too, the tomorrow that has come and gone, and it has not gotten better. When you are half finished writing that letter to your mother that says, I swear to God I tried, but when I thought I'd hit bottom, it started hitting back. There is no bruise like the bruise lonely kicks into the spine. So let me tell you, I know there were days it looks like the whole world is dancing in the streets where you break down like the doors of their looted buildings. You are not alone and wondering who will be convicted of the crime of insisting you keep loading your grief into the chamber of your shame. You are not weak just because your heart feels so heavy. I have never met a heavy heart that wasn't a phone booth with a red cape inside. Some people will never understand the kind of superpower it takes for some people to just walk outside. Some days my hot smile looks like a gutter on a falling house, but my hands are always holding tight to the ripcord of believing a life can be rich like the soil, can make food of decay turn wound into highway. Pick me up in that truck with a bumper sticker that says it is no measure of good health to be well adjusted to a sick society. I have never trusted anyone with the pulled back bow of my spine the way I trust the ones who come undone at the throat, screaming for their pulse to find the fight to pound. 4 nights before Tyler Clemente jumped from the George Washington Bridge, I was sitting in a hotel room in my own town, calculating exactly what I had to swallow to keep a bottle of sleeping pills down. What I know about living is the pain is never just ours. Every time I hurt, I know the wound is an echo, so I keep listening for the moment when the grief becomes a window, when I can see what I couldn't see.